Welcome to The Leader's Edge, where we celebrate leadership and shine a light on the visionary leaders that are shaping our future. Hey, I'm H.R. Huntsman, founder of Leader's Edge, creator of the Leader's Edge Performance Engine and Leader's Edge University. And I'm thrilled to bring you stories from leaders who are making a difference around the world. In each and every episode, we champion the innovative strategies, courageous decisions, and inspiring journeys of those who lead with purpose and passion. So whether you're looking to refine your leadership skills or you simply want to be inspired, my friend, you are in the right place. Today, we are talking with a powerhouse voice in manufacturing leadership and workplace culture, Lisa Ryan. Lisa is a certified speaking professional and the chief appreciation strategist at Gradigy. And I will let her explain what that is. There she helps leaders in manufacturing, construction, and the skilled trades create cultures that keep people engaged, productive, and committed. With 7 years of shop floor experience in the welding industry, Lisa brings credibility and real-world insights to her work. She's the creator of the Six Gears of Gradigy framework, a system designed to shift teams from burnout to buy-in through practical, results-driven behaviors. She's also the host of the Manufacturers Network podcast and the author of Gear Up for Greatness and I think 10 or 12 other books. Lisa's passion is clear, teaching gratitude not as a perk, but as a leadership discipline that helps companies hire better, retain longer, and celebrate what drives performance. We're excited to learn from her journey, discover how gratitude can truly change the game in leadership and culture. Please welcome Lisa Ryan. Lisa, thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking time to be here.
I am so excited to talk to you.
Thank you. So tell us about your newest book, Six Gears of Greatness. What's that about?
Yeah, this is actually, it was so much fun to write because I had written 11 books before and they were all your traditional nonfiction, everything from gratitude and workplace culture and all of that. But I've had this in my mind, this business fable, because, you know, Who Moved Your Cheese and all of these other, The Go-Giver, all these classic fables that I just really enjoyed. And I didn't think that I could write fiction because fiction, it's a whole different animal. But this book just kept kind of tapping me on the shoulder, and I said, okay, let's go for it. And I sat down. So it does have the fiction component of James Peterson taking over as the new president of Steel Tech Manufacturing, and it was just a failing organization, toxic. He wanted to bring it back to its good old days, and then he meets Frank, the wizened maintenance guy, who brings him through the six gears of Gradigy. But of course, at the end of it, I needed to bring the nonfiction back to make it super easy so there is an implementation guide, okay, that chapter by chapter, step by step. But one of the things that I love most about the book is there's actually a Where Are They Now chapter.
So, nice.
And of course, you know that Frank became a consultant and motivational speaker.
That's weird. So you said the word gratitude. You own,
yes,
that word. Tell me,
yes,
about the word gratitude.
Well, Gradigy, the funny thing is when I first started my company, and I started my company the way so many entrepreneurs do, because my sales position was eliminated via group conference call with 12 of us getting canned at the same time.
Oh, goodness.
And I said, no company will ever do that to me again. So I started my company on that day. Now, when I first started my company, I was chief appreciation strategist at Appreciation Strategies, which is quite a mouthful, as you can imagine. So I was trying to figure out a name for my company, and I have a friend of mine, Dick Clough, in Cleveland, Ohio. He's been in the marketing world forever and a day. So a Friday afternoon, Dick and I are walking along the shores of Lake Erie, just putting all these words together, you know, from gratitude and thankfulness and all of those words to try to mush them together and come up with a word. Well, finally, I look at my watch. I said, dude, it's 5:30 on a Friday night. I have a date with my husband. I got to go. So I leave. Scott and I are out to dinner, and Dick calls me. And I said, dude, I just left you an hour ago. And he said, it's Gradigy. And I'm like, oh, it's Gradigy. And I looked at my husband and I said, it's gratitude. And he said, what are you talking about? But it was so perfect because it takes so little explanation when I say gratitude and strategy, because that's what we need to do in the workplace. We create a workplace culture where people feel valued and they feel committed to the organization, and then that's going to keep them there.
What are the high-level components of a good gratitude strategy for an organization?
Well, going through the six gears, the Cliff Notes version.
Tell me about those,
First, it's about attitude, because frankly, we are not going back to the good old days of 2019. The workplace has changed in a post-pandemic economy where employees are, their expectations are different, and we have to figure that out. Then it goes to appreciation, and that's the personal practice of finding the good, because if you look at the science behind it, it does rewire your brain. Frankly, I don't know how I would have gotten through the pandemic without it.
Right.
Then we go to access, and that is not only access to you as a leader, but access to the tools and resources that employees need to do their job. Now we're going to go to appreciation, or to applause, which is the tangible recognition for a job well done.
Good.
My next one, the fifth gear, which is quickly becoming my favorite because it's acts of service. And acts of service, especially when you're looking at millennials and Gen Z coming into the workplace and they want to be part of something bigger. They want to know that what they're doing is making a difference. And so how are we making a dent in the universe by those acts of service? And that builds commitment. And then finally, the final gear, accountability. How do we make sure that this is a process and not just an event ends right away?
Very good. You mentioned millennials and Gen Z.
Yep.
There are now four generations in the workforce, from boomers to me, Gen X, to the millennials and the Gen Z. How are they different? How should we be approaching them different as leaders?
Well, the interesting thing is that when you have 8,500 baby boomers a day retiring, it used to be 10,000, but a lot of them have left. So now 8,500, and you think about the legacy that's leaving, not only the experience, somebody that can hear the machine and know exactly what's wrong with it. How do we take that legacy and transfer it to people coming in? Well, we do that in a couple different ways, through not only mentorship, so that we allow that person who is leaving at some point to carry on their legacy, but we also have reverse mentoring, because these people coming in, I mean, they know technology, to they're wired for it.
That's right.
So if we can, if these people can make technology more understandable for these people, and these people can share the knowledge, skills, and expertise that they've built up in their careers, then we have this perfect storm of having the industry move forward.
What's the challenge of bridging all of that? Because it's not that easy.
No, it's not at all.
What's the big challenge of getting them all to talk together?
Have you ever seen this? You know, I can't find anybody that wants to work. Nobody's loyal to the company. It's all about the money. I just can't find anybody. Have you ever had anybody say that to
you? I hear it about every day.
And the problem is that because a lot of organizations are not demonstrating loyalty to employees, employees don't feel the need to demonstrate to them. So if we need to change the conversation. I was working with one of my clients who, in their 50 years in business, had one layoff. And they only laid her off for about 2 weeks. They ended up bringing her back because they felt so terrible. During tough times, they either cut hours, they might have taken a step back in salary, but they made a commitment to their employees that we are never going to lay you off. And when you have that type of, you know, good times and bad, we have your back. We're going to have conversations with you when the company's struggling, because you know what? Maybe you as an employee will see things that I don't, that can make us money, save us money, increase productivity, reduce downtime, if I listen and I implement what you're sharing.
Right.
So we just need to create this mutual trust that I think what people need to realize is that culture didn't happen overnight. And it's not changing overnight.
So good.
So there's no easy button out there that, oh, we're just going to push. You know what? I learned this fancy schmancy new thing at FabTech. We're going to put it into place and everything's going to change overnight. No, it's not.
Right.
So it's just, it's really investing in the long term, like you and I were talking before the show. It's investing in the long term, knowing that it's moment by moment, conversation by conversation, that that's what's going to turn things around.
I've never met a CEO yet that didn't want to have a good culture or build build a strong team. How are many of these leaders getting in their own way? What are their blind spots? What are the big mistakes they're making?
Well, there's this change of, you know what, if you want to work for my company, you have to change to work for me. Not working anymore. How can my company change? You know, before the pandemic, we never put flexible scheduling and manufacturing in the same sentence.
Right.
Now it's not a nice to have, it's an expectation. So can we go to a four-day work week? Can we have the mom shift where employees work from 10 to 2 so they can put their kid on the bus in the morning and meet them afterwards? Can we have two people doing the same job, split that job? You know, one of the things that I think about with my speaking career, going back to December 31st of 2019, I had more business going into 2020 than I had done in 2019. I mean, 2020 was going to be my best year ever. And I never asked myself the question, gee, I wonder what would happen if a worldwide pandemic came in and shut down my business for 2 years. What would I do? So I encourage my audiences and my clients to ask yourself questions that you never thought you'd have to ask before. Well, flexible scheduling and manufacturing, we can't do that. How can you do that? Start to have those conversations and figure it out.
Let's talk about your career change. You brought it up. I'm curious how it's affected you. How did you have to grow and change when you got punched in the face? How did you bounce? I'd love to know about all of that.
Well, it was interesting because I spent 13 years in industrial sales, including 7 years in the welding industry. And when I left the welding industry to go into medical sales, in the welding industry, I sold maintenance welding consumables. Okay. But in that job, it was my favorite. I mean, I got to go into salt mines and steel mills and auto plants and everything. But I was a straight commission independent contractor. So when the lucrative medical sales position came around with the company car and the 401k and the benefits and all of that kind of stuff, okay, fine.
Pick me.
And I realized that the fastest way to build credibility is through speaking and training. So when I was in the welding industry, I would do oxyacetylene safety seminars for my clients because I wanted to give back to them to show that I wasn't there just to sell stuff. I was there to build a long-term relationship. Okay. And I was also their corporate computer trainer. So imagine, and this is in the late 90s, where the average age is a 58-year-old man who's never touched a computer before. And my job was to teach him why he should take, instead of the 6-inch wide display book into the field, why he should bring a laptop. But that got me into training and making things interesting. And then when I was in medical sales, I did more than 500 continuing education programs.
Wow.
So when my medical sales position was eliminated, again, I founded my company on that day, October 12th, 2010. And was building it. Like I said, took a punch through the pandemic. But because of my own personal gratitude practice that I have had since 2009, I have rewired my brain to find the good. So what did I do? Well, I have my Manufacturers Network podcast. I took up acrylic painting. You know, I did a lot of virtual keynotes and trainings that I still do today. I prefer, obviously, being in person. But, you know, you just figure out what the plan B is. And it's a lot easier when you know that you might not have control of what happens, but you can control how you handle that situation.
So talk to us about, I'm fascinated with the gratitude practice, how that helps your mindset, how that builds resiliency. Walk us through how important that is for each of us.
Yeah. It actually started 2009. I went to a four-day seminar that included a fire walk. It's actually my second fire walk.
Oh my goodness.
And as my friends and I were driving home, I mean, it's super powerful. Not only 4 days, but doing the fire walk, and we were jacked up when we left Chicago. But we also knew that unless we took action, all of that would go right out the window. And we didn't want that to happen, you know, again. So we started sharing. We opened up a Facebook thread because that was 2009. That's what you did.
Okay.
And we shared people we met, experiences that we had, things we learned. And then what my friend Mike said, well, why don't we share three things we're grateful for? And we held each other accountable, did that every day. And I'll tell you, I noticed the difference. I noticed the difference in every relationship, in all my sales calls and my sales. That's why I was having such a great year in medical sales, because I was always looking for the good and erring on the side of service. And when I saw the benefit, I started doing research, and I've read probably, you know, hundreds or thousands of articles, but attended programs, read books, written books about the power of gratitude, because there is so much science behind a greater good science center. Dr. Robert Emmons has written several books on it. I mean, he's like, you know, the guru of gratitude.
Is that right?
But it's really fascinating when you take a look at how much power we have. And again, something that feels like it's so soft, nothing soft about it, because you can, when employees feel engaged and you look at lowering turnover, increasing productivity, increasing safety, all the things that we want to do.
Sure.
Simply by connecting with our employees and finding the good no matter what is going on in our own lives, it works.
Let's talk about how it affects us personally. I'm sure what probably immune system, mindset, endorphins,
yep.
Dopamine.
Absolutely.
How does it rewire my brain? Like, what does it actually do for me physiologically?
It's, well, the dopamine rush, which is why it's funny, because in the Gallup Q12, it talks about one of the things that it says is that I have received recognition for doing good work in the last 7 days. And the specific reason why Gallup talks about 7 days is the dopamine effect, because we need to give our employees those little boosts of dopamine that I appreciate you. What you do is important. Thank you for doing such a great job, whatever it is. So those type of things make a difference. But just the science, I am not a scientist.
Sure.
I love reading about it. So I always tell people, if you really want the science behind it, the Greater Good Science Center at Berkeley is not only that's a fantastic research, and the Institute of Heart Math, which is one word.
Heart math.
Yeah, H-E-A-R-T, capital M-A-T-H, okay. Heart math. Because what heart math does is it takes a look at our emotions and how it impacts us physically.
Nice. Good work. Let's finish with this. You've been through a lot in your career. You've had a lot of different positions. You've bounced back from getting kicked in the gut a couple times. You've built an amazing career. You're having a fantastic impact. You give 40 to 50 keynotes a year, impacting thousands of people who impact hundreds of thousands of people. What would you say to that young person just coming out of trade school, coming out of college, beginning their own business? Here are my top one or two things that I've learned, scars that I've gained that help them succeed in life and in business.
Having some kind of gratitude practice is such an important thing. I mean, keeping a notebook by your bed after you wake up in the morning, before you take that long walk down the hallway, of just writing down three things that you're grateful for. And the nice thing about the morning journal is you can be grateful in advance. You know, I'm so grateful I passed that test today. I'm so grateful that I had a good meeting with my boss.
Saying it.
Yeah, because think about it. You wake up and you're like, ugh, today's going to be terrible. How's your day going to be?
Yeah, right.
But realize that all of this is a journey. You're not going to learn things overnight. I think today, especially when people are just coming out of trade school, you know, we see so much on social media. We see everybody else is living their best life and we're struggling. Know that a lot of times those people are posting the one good moment that they had during the day.
Right.
We're on our own journey. Look for somebody. Approach it from a place of curiosity. If you want to be accepted as a professional by that legacy baby boomer who's been there for 30 years. You know, what do you love about your job? How can I help you? I'd love to watch you and learn from you. And just erring on the side of kindness and erring on the side of service will never lead you wrong.
I love that phrase. You said that twice now. Erring on the side of service.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa, you're an absolute joy.
Thank you so much
for taking time. I love to stay connected with you.
Yeah.
I know you're having 3 talks here at the conference. I know you're going to impact thousands of lives. Thank you. I'm honored by your time.
You're very welcome.
That's it for today's episode of The Leader's Edge. Thank you for joining us. I hope today's conversation inspired you to lead with even greater purpose and passion. My three big takeaways from my conversation with Lisa are, number one, gratitude. Obviously, this is her thing. It's her mantra. It's her focus. It's her purpose. And she said it's not just a nice to have when it comes to creating an attractive culture. Gratitude is a must have. It is a winning strategy for creating an attractive culture. Number two, I love this quote from her, err on the side of service. Listen, if you're going to err on the side of serving your people well or withholding, if you're going to make a mistake, err on the side of service. I think that's a great mentality. And number three, culture is created. Culture just doesn't happen by accident. It's not just it is what it is. As a leader, you are in charge of both designing and defining company culture. Listen, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I would love a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more leaders just like you. And that is the point of The Leader's Edge, to sharpen leaders around the world. And you are helping me do that. Please stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, leadership insights, and updates on future episodes. Check us out at yourleadersedge.com and follow us at Leader's Edge Podcast on all major platforms. So until next time, keep pushing boundaries. Keep leading at the edge. I'm HR Huntsman. I'll see you soon.